Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than Nottinghamshire's comms intern, Mr. Matthew Wiley. So Matt, first things first, mate, thank you very much for coming on to yet another review show in 2022. Always a pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things County Crickets. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, really good. Thank you, mate. Yeah. Obviously, we've had a week off this week, so it's been nice to get up and watch a little bit of village cricket back home and, back at uni now and looking forward to getting back into the county championship as of Thursday.
Absolutely, Matt. Of course, a very, very interesting round indeed up and down the country, as we may touch upon later on in tonight's episode. You mentioned club crickets. I know for a lot of people, the club season has now officially started, which is absolutely fantastic. What is your local club, Matt, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, so my local club is called Lightcliff. We are in the first and second team playing the Bradford League, and the third team, which is what I've been watching today, the Sunday section, play in the Halifax League. And I've been watching those up at a place called Barkisland, which is in the Calder Valley in beautiful West Yorkshire. I had to leave just as my dad went into bat, actually. So I was checking the scorecard on the train back to uni. But they did win. Likely batted first, 133. And I think the bowled Barkisland out for something like 112. So a good, well-fought game. And came out on the right side. And one of my very best friends wasn't playing today, but he plays for Barkisland on a Sunday usually. So pity that he wasn't playing, but still nice to get one over on his club.
Always a bonus, isn't it, to be honest, Matt? And yeah, that's fantastic. It really is. Good job they came out on the right side of the result as well. But unfortunately, as much as we could talk about club cricket, because club cricket is absolutely fantastic, isn't it, to be honest, mates? We are here to discuss the fifth round of the 2022 LV County Championship. Now, before we get into our main analysis and we talk about the star performers, we talk about the key moments and the highlights from each of the seven games that we saw in this week's round of matches, we did just have to address something, actually, which we've been asked a lot on social media, which relates to free entry after tea. Now, this is a massive topic at the moment. It's something which we here at the County Cricket Podcast are firm believers in. And we have spent a lot of time researching each of the 18 counties to see who offers free entry after tea. So after hours and hours of inquiries and research and questions, we have finally got a detailed list of all of the counties which offer free entry after tea. So without further ado, here they are. There are 11 in total, starting with Derbyshire. Then we have Essex, Gloucestershire, Hampshire, Lancashire, Leicestershire, Northamptonshire, Surrey, Sussex, Warwickshire, and Worcestershire. So all of those counties at their main grounds offer free entry after tea in the 2022 LV County Championship. Now, as for the other seven, Yorkshire and Kent, we're not entirely sure, actually, if they offer any discounted entry, but for the time being, that is a little bit of a grey area. But Durham offer £5 entry for adults. Glamorgan offer £5 entry as well, and free entry for kids. Notts offer £6 entry for adults and £1 for kids after 3 p.m. for every county championship match. For Middlesex, they offer half price tickets after tea. And down in Somerset at the Cooper Associates County Ground, entry after tea is £7. So if you've got any more questions about that, please feel free to let us know either via Twitter or Instagram or YouTube, wherever. And we'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. But for those 11 counties, I'll say them again: Derbyshire, Essex, Gloucestershire, Hampshire, Lancashire, Leicestershire, Northamptonshire, Surrey, Sussex, Warwickshire and Worcestershire. Just wanted to give all of those counties a massive mention because it's a fantastic initiative. And if you are in the area for any of those county championship games, get yourself down and support county cricket in 2022. But Matt, without further ado then, aside from club crickets and free entry after tea, let's get into the main chunk of tonight's podcast, which is, of course, our analysis. And what better place to start than at the home of the table toppers, where Surrey beat Northamptonshire by an innings and 5 runs within just 3 days at the Kia Oval. Now, Matt, before we talk about the narrative of this game and how it unfolded, We have to start right at the beginning of the game, in fact, before a ball was even bowled, and that was with the toss. Northamptonshire won the toss in this game and elected to have a bowl first at the Kia Oval, something which we've discussed before here on the podcast. James Vince did it in round two, and Hampshire went on to lose the game. So before we talk about the standout moments, really, Matt, why do you think so many people are choosing to have a bowl at a venue which is notorious for being quite conducive to the bat?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I wonder if it's maybe the shock factor. So you're looking to sort of, no one is expecting you to win the toss and bowl at the Oval. I mean, you just, you know, Surrey, least of all, when he goes out, when Rory Burns goes out to meet his opposite number in the middle, he's thinking, well, if I win the toss, I'm going to bat. And probably if he wins the toss, he's going to bat. So I don't know, maybe you're thinking you can shock them a little bit. I think it's a mental thing. I mean, yes, they could have seen something in the pitch. I mean, what Vasconcelos, Northamptonshire captain Vasconcelos and James Vince obviously both have in common, they're both batters. Now, I'm a big advocate for having a batter as your captain. You need to have a batter as your captain because they see the pitch better. They know what they know the intricacies of that a bit better. And I say that as a bowler. But I just wonder if it's the mental edge. They win the toss and suddenly, oh, what's gone on here? And for a team like Northamptonshire, when you go to Surrey, a mental edge like that can be, you know, it's almost to get one over before the game's even begun. So that doesn't really explain why Hampshire did it, but I do wonder if it's why Northamptonshire did it. You know, they're less fancied, they've got nothing to lose. Why not try and give them a bit of a fright early on? I mean, ultimately it didn't work, but I think kudos for trying.
Well, in fairness, during the early exchanges of the game, Matt, it did work slightly because in the first 53 overs of the game, Northants had Surrey at 133 for four. But as we're getting quite used to seeing in this year's County Championship, the Surrey middle to lower order provided the goods yet again. Sam Curran scoring 73, Gus Atkinson scoring a career best 66 not out from 98 balls. He also scored 12 boundaries, absolutely staggering, the most by any Surrey player in this game. And then Jamie Overton scoring 59 from 81 balls, 5 fours, 3 sixes. I thought he was absolutely superb. With those two in particular, Atkinson and Overton, racking up a 124-run 10th wicket stand to take the Brown Caps past the 400-run mark. Now, it's interesting as well, you mentioned there, Matt, Mr. Rory Burns, someone who, again, former England player, is definitely vying for his position back up the top of the order, given the shaky nature of the English openers in 2021. He scored 107 from 259 balls in this game. It was his 22nd career first-class century, and I think it goes without saying, but he batted very, very well in this game against the likes of Sanderson and Tom Taylor in particular. Do you see an avenue back into that England test team for Rory Burns, or do you think it's a little bit too early? I know it is his first century of the summer, but you know he's going to have a full season potentially to score runs, to generate some rhythm, get that confidence back. Do you see a route back into that England side for the Surrey captain?
Yeah, I do, without a doubt, actually. I think he's in one of those periods where you feel like he's dropping, he's only temporary, don't you? You feel like he's going to come back at some point. And it's weird because in the past, obviously, you know, when you've in past episodes, you've asked me about players like Josh Bohannon, and I've been an advocate of let's give him time, let's wait and see what happens with him. I don't think you need to do that with Rory Burns because he's already gone through the stage of being a young player and proving himself. And he's now at the stage where all he needs is a confidence booster. You know, he's proven his talent. He's proven his talent at test level. He's got a test century, hasn't he? So all he needs is a bit of a confidence booster. And that's the confidence booster. You know, he's hit a century. He's captained a side to the top of the Championship table. I think that's enough, to be honest. I mean, I know that it would potentially or probably be Alex Lees who would drop out. And, you know, he's got the spot at the moment. He would have to do something wrong, as well as Rory Burns doing something right. And I don't want to see him get dropped. You know, the club connection again. But I think, to be honest, he's the most talented opener in the country, isn't he, on his day? Certainly among the classiest. I mean, that stances a bit unusual, isn't it? But when it gets into his flow, I mean, he's just a real talent, isn't he? So yes, I would happily see him back in the England team now that he's proven he's gone away, scored the runs at county level, and he's got the boost he needs. And yeah, he should be back, frankly, I would say. Maybe not for New Zealand, but let's see what happens during New Zealand. But yeah, I think it shouldn't be long.
We shall have to wait and see when it comes to Rory Burns, but of course, a very, very promising sign indeed for the Brown Caps ahead of the rest of this county championship campaign. And aside from the bat in hand, I've mentioned this beforehand, I shall mention it again. The real thing that's impressed me about Surrey so far in 2022 has actually been the bowling. And in this game, it was no different. Jordan Clark in the first innings, taking figures of 3 for 55. Colin de Grandon, an absolute hero, a cult hero here in my county of Warwickshire, taking figures of 4 for 39 from his 14.5 overs. And then in the second innings, Atkinson taking 3 for 26. Frankie Worrell, the new signing, taking 3 for 37. Clark, again, funnily enough, Surrey's leading wicket taker so far, with 21 wickets at 25.86 in his first five championship matches. He went and took 2 for 43. If this Surrey bowling attack continues to produce the goods, if they can continue to take 20 wickets every single game, like they are doing so far, you've got to fancy the Brown Caps' chances. You really do, because that batting lineup is incredible. Arguably the strongest in the country. If the bowlers can fire, it does have the makings of a very, very memorable season indeed for the South London outfit. Then on the flip side, I suppose, Matt, for North Ants, aside from the toss, because I was a little bit disappointed by that, to be honest, but something which is worrying me about North Ants at the moment is the batting. It is the batting. And in this game, quite staggeringly, they found themselves 128 for 7, not just once, but twice in the same game. So that shaky batting lineup at the moment, it's given me cause for concern. Would you agree with that, to be honest, Matt? I mean, we've seen contributions in this game from the likes of Luke Proctor. He scored 83 and an out. You've got Emilio Gay in the second inning scoring 51. But compared to a Surrey, compared to a Hampshire, compared to a Lancashire, there haven't been those consistent performances across multiple players just yet, has there?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, again, I know I keep bringing this up, but you have to remember the discrepancy in the budget that Surrey have got versus the budget that Northamptonshire have got. But they've always done quite well in terms of bringing those players through still to remain competitive. And it is always going to be tough for Northamptonshire to go to the Oval and to win. You know, they're always going to be up against it. But yeah, you're right. Those players have the talent and they've just not quite shown it, have they? I mean, Luke Proctor at 4 was surprising because he's not usually a number 4, is he? I feel like he's been shoved up the order a little bit there. So perhaps you're placing a little bit too much pressure on him. I mean, he rose to it in the first inning, didn't he? Don't get me wrong. But I just wonder, yeah, you needed somebody to stay with him, didn't he? When your second highest scorer is only getting 23, it's you're always going to be up against it. But that is full credit to Surrey's bowling attack again. I mean, you mentioned it there. Colin de Grandon, I've got to get it in. Former Bradford League player. Made his name at Bayledon. But yeah, it's a really, really tough for North Ants to go to the Oval and do something when you come up against a bowling attack with the quality of Surrey. But yeah, this is another thing. This is something I've just thought of maybe in the last few minutes. Are they hoping that the pitch is going to get flatter? Are they hoping that at that point, you know, let's get into Surrey, let's be aggressive? I mean, you mentioned him being aggressive there. Has he been aggressive in another way, in the sense that he's thinking, right, well, we'll get Sanderson on to him? I mean, I've got to confess, I don't know what the weather would like. I don't know if there were a few clouds lurking on Thursday morning. So is he thinking, well, we'll get Sanderson to rip into them, let's see what we can do, and then we'll get the heavy roller on this, and maybe we can be the ones that will bat big and bat long at the Oval? So obviously it didn't transpire that way. Of course it didn't, we've already said that. But yeah, it's going back to the original thing, it's disappointing, isn't it, from North Ants, that I think their game plan just didn't work. And when you've been in the field, you know, watching your opponents amass 401 in, you know, more than 125 overs, which is what Surrey did, it demoralises you, doesn't it? And credit to Proctor for putting up a bit of a fight, but that's the way it goes, unfortunately, isn't it? When you you've watched your opponent get so far into the lead. Yeah, it eats away at you. And yeah, ultimately, Surrey, stronger outfit on paper, stronger outfit in the game.
Well, they most certainly were, Matt. And yes, worthy winners in South London this week. For Northants, as I said, if they can sort out... They're having these odd little moments of brilliance. I think back to Rob Keogh. I mean, he was absolutely fantastic in the early rounds as well. They're having these individual performances. It just hasn't come together as a unit just yet. But if they can improve those batting performances, I think that bowling attack with the likes of Sanderson, Berg, Tom Taylor was impressive this week. I must admit, got a couple of big wickets. They can produce some shocks, but we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, it's very easy for us to say this, sitting on a couch and discussing it in hindsight. It's a lot harder to go out there and actually do it on the field. But I do think Northants, they've got to bounce back strong this week against Warwickshire if they are to really make a challenge in this year's county championship. And talking of challenges, that is a perfect transition to our next county, which is the second place team in county cricket at the moment, Hampshire CCC, because the Southern County beat Gloucestershire by 87 runs at the Aegeus Bowl in the fifth round. Unfortunately for Hampshire this week, we did find out that Joe Weatherly, their opener, has unfortunately been ruled out for a while as a result of a hand injury. But in his place, Felix Organ stepped up in quite sensational style, scoring 107 from 234 balls in the first innings to register his second career first-class century. And then with the ball in hands, Matts, I couldn't talk about Hampshire without mentioning that seam attack. Because with the likes of Abbott, Abbas, Barker, Wheel, Fuller, Dawson, Holland, the list goes on and on and on. It's an absolutely stacked bowling attack, to say the very least. And a certain Mohammed Abbas this week was quite exceptional. He took figures of 6 for 45 from his 17 overs to rack up his 39th career first-class fiver. That is absolutely staggering. 39 five-wicket hauls in 137 career matches. Matts, if you could, a few words on Mohammed Abbas. Just how impressive is this guy when he's in rhythm, when he's got confidence, and when the ball is doing some talking?
Yeah, really impressive, isn't he? I mean, it's really strange because his abilities and the way he goes about his game, you wouldn't expect him. He's an English bowler. That's what he seams the ball. He's really good in cloudy conditions. He does well on a green top. He's not that fast. It's like, you know, you see your really good Pakistani bowler, your Pakistani seam bowlers, they get most of their weaponry from being fast, don't they? From being out and out, rapid. Like, you know, your Shaheen Afridis of this world, they crank the pace up and that's where their weaponry comes from. Abbas isn't like that, is he? Abbas, you know, he sends it down at, you know, 82, 83 miles an hour, but he operates on the swing and the seam. And frankly, you know, he would complete that attack fully, wouldn't he? He would bring a whole new dimension to his country's attack. But while he's doing it for Hampshire, he's doing it well, isn't he? I mean, you can't... He's one of those really consistent performers, isn't he? I mean, he's such a brilliant overseas sign. He's such a brilliant overseas acquisition because sometimes you can get overseas that, you know, don't really... They maybe plug a gap. They maybe stick in plaster. They don't really add much there and there. You maybe sign them for the name. But he's not one of those. He's slotted in fantastically. He's got a job to play in that Hampshire attack and he does it fantastically. And he's never he doesn't usually open with the very first over, does he? He's usually, I mean, actually, to be fair, in this game, it was Keith Barker. I thought it was usually Kyle Abbott, actually, who bowled the very first over. But what that does, I suppose, is it just gives him an opportunity, just gives Abbott an opportunity to stand at the far end, just have a look what it's doing. You know, it only takes one over, and then he's straight into his stride, isn't he? And he does that so well. And you know, you can't drive him because you'll nick off. You struggle to take runs off him. He's the full package. And he's another one, really. It's like Shan Masood. He's another one, frankly, that I wished he was English, because when James Anderson calls it a day, he's exactly the sort of player that we need. But yeah, Hampshire have got themselves a gem there. You have to full credit to the coaching team down there.
Absolutely. And just looking at his stats so far this summer, 5 matches, 22 wickets at 17.81. He has been absolutely outstanding so far. Has Mohammed Abbas, and again, 6 for 45. Absolutely unbelievable. It's funny you mention as well about Pakistani seam bowlers, because aside from Mohammed Abbas, another Pakistani seamer in action in this game was Mohammed Amir. Now, he took match figures of 6 for 90 from his 39 overs in this game. I thought he was very, very impressive. And we can't talk about Mohammed Amir's bowling without mentioning the evening session on day 2, because this was absolute carnage. So just to set the scene for those who didn't watch the game, Hampshire were 342 all out in their first innings. In response, as a result of that incredible bowling display from Mohammed Abbas, Gloucestershire were 179 all out. Now, in the evening session on day 2, Hampshire, within the first 9 overs of their innings, were reduced to 15 for 4. 15 for 4. Mohammed Amir and Ryan Higgins were making the ball do all sorts of talking. And they got the wickets of Organ, Holland, Abbott and Abbas. They got both night watchmen out within the space of 9 overs. It was absolutely blockbuster entertainment. It really is. And a great job as well from the Hampshire live stream to show us it all in all of its glory. But from that position of being 15 for 4, Hampshire needed someone to really take control of this game. They needed someone to bring the momentum back for the home side. And to be honest, in this game, there could not have been a better player to do exactly that. A certain Anirin Donald, a man who we've had here on the podcast. He's a very interesting character, and he's been through some absolutely rotten injury luck since 2019. For those who don't know, he suffered back-to-back ACL tears, which have kept him out for essentially 2 years. In this game, with his side struggling, Anirin just came out firing in the most unbelievable of manners, scoring 89 from 97 balls, 8 fours, 3 sixes. Some of the shots as well, in particular the little glances off the pads, the pull shots, were absolutely delectable, to say the least. Matt, just a couple of words before we move on to Gloucestershire and analyse their batting. A few words on Anirin Donald's batting this week, and also just how good and how rewarding it is to see this guy back in county cricket after such a difficult journey with those injuries.
It's really, really good, isn't it? I mean, the fact that you show that mental strength, because so many, I suppose the option is that, or not the option, it's not like you make a choice, is it? But the possibility of this young man's career just falling apart through no fault of his own is there. The possibility is there, and it can affect you so badly. But to build yourself up and, you know, to get yourself ready to come back after one ACL is bad enough, it's tough enough, to then do it again, you wouldn't blame him for thinking, well, what's the point here, would you? You just really wouldn't. You worked so hard to get to this point, and then that happens to you, you know, it's, what's the point? But that is some serious mental integrity, some serious mental strength to come back. And I suppose maybe it might have almost taught him, well, you've got nothing to lose, have you? It's at that point, just go out and you've got the ability. I mean, that's obviously what convinced Hampshire to pick him up from Glamorgan. It's without a doubt he's talented. So go out and have some fun. And boy, they come off, hasn't he? I mean, 89 of 97, that takes some doing, especially, you mentioned Mohammed Amir, that he's probably the other Pakistani seam bowler who swings it around, isn't he? Much like a bat. And yeah, to take him on, and to, when the ball's moving, and, you know, it's a red ball as well, so white ball, you're basically saying bowl it where the batsman can hit it. You know, you don't have to do any of that. You can be a lot cleverer as a bowler with when it's a championship game. So to score quickly, it's far more difficult. And yeah, what an impressive performance that is. He almost timed it just at the right point, didn't he? Well, he almost got a little bit lucky with the fact that the new ball had done so much damage, because when he came in quite far down the order, didn't he? You know, sort of at number nine. By that point, you know, the ball was just getting a bit soft. It was just, you know, coming up to about 25 overs old. So the shine had gone. It was just getting a little bit there. And it was, you know, there was still being a little bit in it, but it was still just starting to get soft and, you know, losing some of its new ball ability. And, yeah, it would have just been the sharpness of it, the weaponry had diminished, and he just took full advantage, didn't he? It's a pity he just couldn't quite get a ton, but we will take the innings and look at it and admire it and just hope that he can add those extra 11 runs next time.
Absolutely, Mats. And yeah, I'm just absolutely elated for him. So big up to Nyrond Donald and, of course, to James Clegg as well. No longer with Hampshire, but the lead physio, who, of course, has played an integral part in bringing Nye back to full fitness. Absolutely delighted for those two, to say the least. Now, when it comes to Gloucestershire, on the flip side, I did mention I'd talk a little bit about their batting. I do wish they would have come out of the crease ever so slightly. To Mohammed Abbas, Ben Brown was behind the stumps this week. He wasn't up to them, not like, you know, Michael Burgess does with Warwickshire, for example. So there was room for manoeuvre with those Gloucestershire batters. They could have come out the crease. They could have tried to nullify the chance of Abbas and Barker trapping them LBW. Of course, again, a lot easier said than done. But someone who did really impress me this week was George Scott, in particular in the second innings. I thought he was absolutely superb. He scored 77 from 164 balls, had a good rhythm, had a good flow to his game, scored 13 boundaries. And Miles Hammond as well. Long-term listeners of the podcast, you will know I watched this guy in 2019 in his hometown of Cheltenham. I've got a lot of time for Miles Hammond as a cricketer. He also dug in like an absolute warrior, scoring 67 from 190 balls. So obviously the end result's very disappointing for Gloss. Of course it is. It's another loss in the column. But at the same time, you do have to look again at the positives. The positives being George Scott, the positives being Ryan Higgins, the positives being Miles Hammond as well. But I think it's also important to remember they didn't have Chris Dent. Nassim Shah's out injured. David Payne was injured. Matt Taylor was injured as well, as was Ben Charlesworth. So they are missing a lot of the key pieces of the jigsaw. So disappointing for Gloss. Do I back them to come back, though? Absolutely. I do think there's a lot of strength and character in that glorious Gloucester's outfit. And they should be fine, I think, for the rest of the 2022 County Championship. But Matt, aside from that game then, down on the South Coast, let's go up to the Northwest, actually to the ground where I was based this week, because Lancashire and my county of Warwickshire played out a draw at Emirates Old Trafford. Now, this was an interesting game. Unfortunately, the weather on day two did play spoil sport, but we saw some excellent cricket up in Manchester in the Championship this week. And you know exactly who I'm going to talk about first. Matt, I can see it on your face. And I know that Joe, if he was here as well, he would be rolling his eyes because you know exactly who I'm going to mention here. But a certain Dominic Sibley. Again, someone who was in the England conversation, unfortunately had a terrible 2021, fell out of favour, was offered a place on the Lions tour to Australia and declined in order to work on his technique with Warwickshire's batting coach Tony Frost. That work seems to have paid off quite magnificently. And I was absolutely delighted for him this week. He scored 142 not outs from 329 balls, including 18 boundaries. And some of the shots, he played two cracking cover drives and two brilliant straight drives as well down the ground against Matt Parkinson. I couldn't believe it. You could hear the noise up in the media centre. It's absolutely fantastic to watch as a viewer. But he really has put in the hard yards over this winter. And I must say, he looks like a completely different player. He really does. I'm not saying he's perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but the footwork against spin seems to be massively improved. The dependence on leg side shots seems to have decreased ever so slightly. I would say he has started to expand more on the offside. And you know what's massive as well, which I didn't realise actually until I was told in the press box, but this was his first century in a Warwickshire shirt since September 2019. So it's been almost 3 years, basically, since Dom has scored a century for Warwickshire. That, of course, being against your county of Notts, funnily enough, Matt, at Trent Bridge, to save the Bears from relegation. But I just thought he was absolutely superb this week. So I had to give Dom a massive mention, to be honest, in this week's podcast. And then on the bowling side for Lancs, couldn't mention Dom Sibley's batting without mentioning Matt Parkinson's bowling. Again, someone who we have an awful lot of time for here. On the podcast, we've mentioned the England aspirations. He took 3 for 60 this week. Tom Bailey took 3 for 61. Hassan Ali as well. By the way, the leading wicket taker in Division 1 for 2022. Just the 24 wickets for the Red Rose. 24 wickets at 18.5 for the new signing. Absolutely fantastic piece of business. But he took 3 for 81 in the first innings. And I must say, I was very, very impressed with Lancashire's discipline. It was a good batting wicket. Consistent bounce. There wasn't a lot of spin in it. And yet Lancs fought back quite brilliantly. And talking of Lancs, we'll flip over to the batting now. And Matt, I want to talk in particular, again, this seems like a theme for tonight's podcast, but a certain former England opener by the name of Keaton Jennings. Now, Keaton's had a bit of an issue when it comes to injury. I think it was a calf injury. If my memory serves me correctly, he's been out basically of cricket since August 2021 as a result. He came back in quite scintillating fashion in this week's championship match, scoring 110 and racking up his first century for the Red Rose since the Roses match in July 2021. Matt, a few words, if you could, on Keaton Jennings, because he's an interesting character, isn't he?
Yeah, very. I mean, it's interesting you said that, because most people kind of, you look at his ability in the subcontinent and that, you know, he plays really well in India when he's been to India in the past, and he plays really well, and people kind of make the assumption, oh, he's good against spin. Yes, he's not bad against spin, but I think his real ability is that low and slow pitch, and that's what we saw at Old Trafford. Now, I'm not completely sure if the pitch was used or not, or if it had, I'm not sure how old it was or how many cracks were in it or whatever, but it was certainly low and slow from what I've seen of it. And I had a friend there, when did it rain? Day two, must have been day three, must have been yesterday he was there. And he said, yeah, he picked the wrong day, because it was just, you know, there was far more in it for the batters than was, because it just, you know, it was not doing much. I mean, you know, we can see that at Old Trafford. It's got a tendency, hasn't it, to be quite quick early on, but then to slow down very, very rapidly as the game progresses. But yeah, that's where he thrives, and that is why he thrived in this game, because when the pitch is slow, he can exploit that. And yeah, you're right. I mean, Warwickshire have got a really, really good seam attack. I mean, McAndrew, he's another overseas signing. There's a good bit of recruitment that's come in. Oliver Hammond-Dolby, Halifax boy. And he's just, yeah, these are really, really good professionals, and he's stood tall, and yeah, he's done well. And you know, is he back in the England conversation? Probably not, but who knows? I mean, keeps going runs like that, there might be a spot.
We'll have to wait and see, won't we, Matt? To be honest, I know it's a very cliche saying, but the door's never closed, it's always ajar. Anything can happen in this wonderful game. You mentioned there about the Bears bowlers, because just to give this a little bit of context, Jennings scored 110, Luke Wells, his opening partner, scored 80. And those two were piling on the runs for fun with a 166-run opening partnership from the first 55 overs of the innings. But to give the Bears a tremendous amount of credit, and I'm going to give this full credit to two men in particular, Nathan McAndrew, who took 4 for 85, and Oliver Hammond-Dolby, who is having the season of his life. 3 for 33 from 24.3 overs. He bowled 14 maidens. Ollie Hammond-Dolby, take a bow. We love the Owl here in the Midlands, and this is why. He's a brilliant bowler. I'm glad that people are finally starting to see it. And again, he deserves a rest after this week's performance. I hope that the boys have given him something to thank him for his efforts. But from 241 for one, that's where Lancs were at, they collapsed to 361 all out on a pitch which, as I mentioned, there did seem to be a lot more for the batters. With that being said, though, Nathan McAndrew, I also wanted to give him a special mention. 4 for 85, he struggled last week against Somerset, struggled in his first spell. And then it was day two. He did a spell of short bowling, which really impressed me. He did the hard yards. It was the spell which we'd expect from a Ben Stokes, for example, in the England side. And that just got the confidence flowing. And then you go into day three, he looked like a completely different seam bowler. So big up to Nathan McAndrew. I thought he was absolutely fantastic this week. And fingers crossed that he can keep up this form heading into the Northants game on Thursday at Edgbaston. But aside from those two first innings, the Bears did have to bat again. To be honest, aside from a little bit of a wobble, and it was a wobble, it was a collapse, it was a bona fide collapse, to be honest, in the afternoon session of day four, this game was always going to go one way as a result of that poor weather on day two. So a hard-fought draw, it has to be said, but I think a fair result for both sides. I think both sides bowled their hearts out. I think both sides had good batting performances. And I think that a draw pretty much accurately reflects the performances of both sides in this particular game. So, yeah, I'll say this as a Warwich fan. I'll certainly take that away at Old Trafford. So hopefully for both teams, they can use this as a platform with which to go on and get wins in the next round of matches heading into Thursday this week. But Matt, before we go on to Division 2 then, and we get into the second half of our show, we do have one more Division 1 match to catch up on. And that is, of course, the draw between Essex and Yorkshire down in Chelmsford. Now, I'm not sure how much we can actually analyse of this game. It was three innings long, but if you look at the scores, 403 all out for Essex in the first innings, Yorkshire 465 all out in their innings, and then Essex 167 for none in their second innings. I think it's pretty safe to say, having watched part and parcel of the live stream, it was a bit of a feather bed down at the Cloud FM County Grounds in Chelmsford this week. But with that being said, we did see some very, very good batting performances. And Paul Walter, I wanted to mention him first. His maiden first-class ton in the format, 141 from 322 balls, scored 18 fours, scored a big six as well. Really, really chuffed to pieces for Paul that he's finally got that century on the board. It's more than deserved. He's a fantastic all-rounder for the Eagles. And talking of a fantastic professional, not just for the Eagles, but again, going on to that recurring theme of the podcast, a former England opener and just the fifth all-time leading test run scorer of all time, a certain Sir Alistair Cook. Matt, we have to talk about Chef. He scored two centuries in the same game for the first time in his 329 match first-class career, scoring 107 in the first innings and 102 not outs in the second innings. So quite the memorable week, to be honest, for Chef, one of England's finest ever sons in the cricketing world, bringing up his 71st and 72nd career first-class tons. So Matt, I think we've spoken a lot about Chef on the podcast, but again, were you quite surprised with that stat? The first time in his legendary first-class career they'd ever scored two centuries in the same game. It's quite a staggering stat, that, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? And I'll be honest, the first time I found out of it was when you tweeted it from the TCCP account. Yeah, it's really, really surprising. I think it kind of underlined how impressive it is to do it because, you know, when you're talking a player of the calibre of Alistair Cook not having done it before or before today, yeah, it's a real, real feat, isn't it? I mean, you know, he was always going to do it at some point, you'd imagine, wouldn't you? I don't know, maybe he'll retire now. Maybe this is the zenith he was looking for. But yeah, that's a really, really solid performance. And there were different centuries, weren't they? Like in the first innings, I'm not going to say he was scratching around because Alistair Cook doesn't scratch around, does he? He just played magnificently wherever he played. But it was, you know, it was slow, but it was resistant. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't scratching around. He was playing calmly and confidently and slowly, and he's just amassing the run because the pitch, yes, the pitch, like you said, it was flat, it did turn out flat, but there's always the possibility that you might find something in it. So he's his job as an open, obviously, is see the bowlers off confidently, just stay there and amass the runs, and that's exactly what he did. But then in the second innings, by which point, obviously, I'm not sure if Yorkshire had the heavy roller on it, and then if Essex had the heavy roller on it again in between innings, they might have done, but equally, don't really look like there was much point. but it clearly flattened out. It was clearly even flatter to the point that York couldn't even take a wicket at all in 62nd innings over. But that was much quicker. You know, that was 183 balls to score more or less the same amount of runs. And I think at one point he was 27 off 33, 34 or something. So he was flying. I mean, that's by Alistair Cook's standards. You know, I'm not about to say slow batters and poor batters, because Crikey, like you said, he's probably our finest batter ever, barring Joe Root maybe, or barring somebody various names throughout history, but he's certainly up there. But yeah, again, I think that comes back to the original saying, it underlines how impressive a feat it is, and it underlines how impressive a batter he is and how well-rounded he is to be able to almost not just score two centuries, but score two different centuries, bat in two different styles, and show that off. And Alistair, why did you retire, man? Please come back. We need you. Honestly, just pay this man what he wants to be in the England team, because he's currently, you know, don't get me wrong, Essex are profiting, but it's England are losing out.
Yeah, it's always going to be the question on everyone's lips, isn't it? Why did he retire so early? But again, big up to Chef. And also, I saw that he spent quite a bit of time with the Essex fans as well. So, lovely, lovely fella. Great, great character of the club. And obviously an icon here in England and Wales. And Matt, talking of Yorkshire, we're not going to go too much into the analysis of this guy, because we spoke at length, actually, just last week about his exploits in the Championship so far. But Harry Brook has just been on another planet so far. Just to read some stats out for those who aren't aware, he is currently the leading run scorer in this year's County Championship in Division 1. 635 runs at an average of 158.75. As if that wasn't enough as well, the strike rate, just the 78.98. So yeah, a little bit slow that, to be honest, by some players' standards. I'm only joking, of course. Harry Brook's just been absolutely unbelievable. And you look at his score so far, he's had 6 innings, 101, 56 not outs, 84, 77 not outs, 194, and 123. He's not been out for less than 50 in the Championship so far. So Harry Cherington Brook, take a bow. And again, if he keeps up this form, again, we talk about the England conversation, it is just a matter of time before his name is also thrown into the hat. But someone whose name is already well and truly in the hat, the former England captain, funnily enough, Joe Root, we saw him back as well in county cricket, which was absolutely fantastic. He scored 75 from 112 balls, including 9 fours, in his first Championship appearance of the summer. And Dawid Milan as well. I've been really impressed with Dawid so far for Yorkshire in this year's Championship. He also continued his good form with an 87 in their first and only innings. So for the White Rose, things looking very, very good indeed with the bat in hand. In terms of the ball, I suppose for both sides, not too much really to analyse this week. Very, very high scoring, not much in the wicket. But I did just want to mention Don Bess. I thought he bowled really well in this game. He took 3 for 82 from 44 overs. He was bowling some long spells as well, with very, very little reward. But he bowled 18 maidens. And something which really impressed me with Don, in the past, the biggest criticism of his bowling was searching for wickets. He'd bowl 4 or 5 really good balls, and then he'd ruin his spell of pressure by bowling 1-2 full. He'd overpitch it, searching for wickets. He didn't do that this week. And as a result, it paid dividends. I thought he was really, really good with the ball in hand, looked a lot more disciplined, had that more controlled feel to his bowling. So big up to Don Bess. In a game where bowlers struggled, I thought he shone out like an absolute beacon. But Matt, to be honest, that is basically it from that game, analysis-wise. Again, a very high-scoring one, to say the least. But let's have a look where all of those 4 games leave Division 1 at the end of Round 5. So at the top of the table, we've got Surrey County Cricket Club on 89 points. In second, we find Hampshire on 81 points. In third, the Red Rose of Lancashire are there on 72 points. In fourth, are Yorkshire on 64 points. In fifth are Essex on 54 points. In sixth are my County of Warwickshire on 50 points. In seventh are Northants on 40 points. 8th are Gloucestershire on 34 points, 9th are Somerset on 33 points, and in 10th and final place in Division 1, we have Kent on 30 points. So an interesting round, to say the least. I must admit, I've really enjoyed all of the games this week, and Division 1 is really well and truly beginning to shape up to be quite the competitive league in 2022. But aside from Division 1, Matt, let's talk about Division 2. And let's be honest, there's only one place that we can start this week, isn't there? At New Road, where we saw history being made by the brand new England captain. Now, Matt, before I go into the stats and I talk about the records, I talk about all of the crazy things associated with this innings from a certain Benjamin Stokes, what did you make of the game? Because aside from that incredible individual performance, again, it was a bit of a flat wicket at New Road. The game did kind of peter out heading into day 4. What did you make of the game as a whole, and how impressed were you with that performance from the New England captain?
Well, it's some way to announce your return after injury. It's some way to cap off your announcement as England captain, is it? I mean, you couldn't really ask for any better. I mean, I think we've known for a long time that, don't get me wrong, Stokes' bowling is excellent, but I think we've known for a long time that he's a batter who bowled well, isn't he? He's not anything other than, you know, he can bat at number 5. That's he's a batter who bowled well. But on my life, when he bats like that, you run out of superlatives, don't you? It's like, it won't quite go gain the same level of fame as, Headingley or Headingley 2019 or Cape Town 2016, I think it was, yeah. When he was just spanking international standard bowlers all over the park. But he was still it's just that dominance, isn't it? It's that absolute, wherever you bowl to him, he just puts it anywhere. I mean, I think that Premier Inn at other hotel grounds are available. I think that Premier Inn at New Road was under threat at one point, wasn't it? I mean, I've stayed in that. I know how close those windows are to the boundary, and he was just peppering it, wasn't he, all over the place. And I think as well, you have to mention, I apologise if I'm about to mention this ahead of you, but when he did go to his century with 6-6, 6-6, 6-4 off Josh Baker. And Josh Baker's a good prospect, by the way. You know, this is not some sort of second team who's been drafted in desperately because Worcestershire are desperate to part outside. He's a good prospect. And obviously, you know, when you come up against Ben Stokes, you realise, yeah, the levels to this game. But what Stokes did to text Josh Baker after having hit all the runs off his bowling to make sure he's all right, that just underlines him as a person, doesn't it? That underlines his suitability for captain of England, because there's two things, obviously, that go into being captain of a team. There's ability, you've got to lead from the front, you've got to put those match-winning performances in, but then there's the mental side of it as well, and there's the pastoral side, and you've got to make sure your players are able to perform at their best by being a good character and being somebody that people want to be around. And I think, you know, Stokes has shown that both of those qualities, by hitting Josh Baker for all those boundaries and pulling off a fantastic inning, but then by making sure he was okay and ensuring that it hadn't dented his confidence too much. And you would hope that receiving a text from Ben Stokes, I don't know how close they are, whether they know each other too well. You'd have to imagine not too well, but, you know, receiving a text from Ben Stokes would be enough to brighten any young cricketer's day, even if he's just done that to you. So, yeah, it underlines his credentials in more ways than one. And I am definitely excited, as I'm sure a lot of other people are, to see how he gets on as captain.
Absolutely. And can you imagine if he does do this in the Test arena? Goodness me, we'll be talking about it for many, many years to come, to say the very least. In terms of the stats and the numbers, for the cricket badgers out there, you're going to absolutely love some of these this week. Ben Stokes, 161. From 88 balls. He reached his century in just 64 deliveries. It's the fastest first-class century in Durham's history. Incredible stats. Absolutely love that, to say the least. And the other one, which really stands out to me straight away, he scored 17 sixes in one county championship innings. It's the most ever in a single championship innings. He beat Graham Napier's record of 16. it's just remarkable. And some of the shots, you mentioned the Premier in, goodness me, that must have been quite the nervous time for the owners of that, thinking about all the damages and repairs they would have needed to the windows, but also the straight shots he was producing, in particular against the spin of D'Oliveira and Josh Baker. It was just one of the most insane innings I've ever seen in the Championship. And, you know, after a week of fanfare and there's been all this media attention, brand new England captain, what a way to announce yourself with an innings like that. So, Benjamin Stokes, again, you've pretty much done it all, to be honest, in this game, but provided the goods yet again for us all to enjoy at New Road this week. And Matt, it's interesting you mentioned there about that text to Josh Baker, because I was going to bring this up and I just had a little bit of a message, to be honest, for Josh. I think Ben Stokes is actually a fantastic example of this. One performance, one bad bowling spell doesn't define you as a cricketer. Josh Baker is a fantastic young prospect. He's an England under 19, for goodness sake. You know, he's got that left arm angle. He does turn it a lot. He's got great control and discipline for an 18-year-old. And he's just been hammered by one of the best all-rounders on the planet. There's nothing he can do about that, to be honest. But you know what? In years to come, he might look back on this and think, yeah, I did bowl badly in that moment, but at the same time, it was a catalyst. This actually shaped my career, a bit like Stuart Broad's 36-run over against Yuvraj Singh. I back him to come back very, very strong in both the T20s and the Championship. So for Josh Baker, I just hope he hasn't taken it too personally. I hope he keeps those shoulders high and he keeps on producing the goods, because he is a seriously, seriously good prospect indeed for the West Midlands outfits. And talking of two other prospects, Matt, I'll start with the Worcestershire one first, Jack Haynes. Someone I've mentioned so many times here on the podcast. We've had him on. Again, Jack was an absolute delight, to say the least. Gave us some great insight into how he works as a batsman. But to see him register his first ever century in first-class cricket, even though I'm a Bears fan, that was very, very special indeed. He's a great prospect. He's very classy. He's got this great elegance and flair. But this week, he almost played within himself. And I think that's just as impressive when you can almost suppress those natural instincts and your natural game to dig in and graft away for your side, alongside Azhar Ali, who scored 92. I thought he was also very impressive, was the former Pakistan Test skipper. And some of the bowling that these two were facing, from Matty Potts, a man who Dustin Melton mentioned on the preview show to both of us here on the Counter Cricket podcast. Matty Potts, I'm running out of words, to be honest, to describe how impressed I've been with him so far this summer. He went and took 6 for 62 in 24 overs on a pitch which was offering absolutely nothing. Bowled 9 maiden overs. He bowled some beautiful short stuff as well. Really well angled, really intimidating against the Worcestershire batting lineup. And he is developing into a serious seam bowler. Just to give some stats when it comes to Matty Potts. Again, he is the leading wicket taker in Division 2 so far. 24 wickets. An average of 22.87. And if you look at his wider career as well, he's played 23 first-class matches. He's already taken 3 fifers. He is a serious prospect, so watch out and remember the name, Matty Potts. And just another couple of players that we'll mention before moving on to our remaining two games of this week's review show. Ben Gibbon, 21-year-old seam bowler from Cheshire, was working on a construction site in 2021 and playing for his local national county side, made his Worcestershire debut in a week where the Pairs bowlers did struggle an awful lot to generate any sort of assistance on that surface. He went at less than 4 runs and over and took figures of 2 for 92. So Ben Gibbon, big up to Ben. I thought he was absolutely superb, didn't show any nerves at all in this game and bowled very, very well indeed. And finally, Matt, before we do move on, one final player who I'm really happy is in good form, Sean Dixon. Sean Dixon, so far, he is also the leading run scorer in Division 2, 729 runs at an average of 81. He scored 3 consecutive centuries opening the batting. He's been remarkable, hasn't he?
He has, yeah, and I've got to be honest, I'm particularly delighted because I transferred him into my fantasy team.
Lucky for some.
I know. So that was, I feel like there's that little TikTok video, I feel like I am Jose Mourinho. I feel like, I've made a good team selection there. No, he's brilliant, isn't he? He's really, really talented. He's that that opener style that does really well in terms of just taking the shine off the new ball. And indeed, to be honest, in the second innings, I mean, you know, we talked about pitches getting flatter. And then the second innings, they had a bit of fun, didn't they, by the point that it was, you know, blatantly clear that this was going to end in a draw. He just, not quite as aggressive as Ben Stokes, but he wasn't far off, was he? Quite a few sixes that he was smearing various Worcestershire bowlers all over the ground for. And obviously his dismissal brought about the declaration from Durham, by which point they were, you know, well and truly out of sight. But yeah, I mean, that was just, yeah, two centuries in the same game when Alistair Cook hadn't managed it until now. Yeah, it just shows how impressive it is. And Sean Dixon staying in my team for another week. So, Sean, if you're listening, if you can do it again next week, mate, that'd be really impressive. Thank you.
Yeah, pretty good choice, that, to be honest, Matt. Maybe I might put him in mine, to be honest, as well, at some point this summer. He's been absolutely fantastic so far in a Durham shirt. And I don't think we're going to go too much into it, but just one final thing, actually, before we do move on to the events which happened down in Hove this week. When it came to the follow-on, there was a lot of chat on social media about whether or not Durham should have enforced it. I think it's one of those decisions where I think you can see the logic in both. Enforcing the follow-on on that wicket, it was incredibly flat. I know they did bowl out Worcestershire for 309 runs, but again, with better application, I think Worcestershire probably could have dug in for even more overs. And then I suppose with the declaration, they did have a fantastic innings. I mean, they were 170 for one at the time of the declaration. They did try to set up this game. I know that some people will say that there could have been a little bit more intent when it came to that follow-on. They could have gone for the jugular in this game, but I can see logic on both sides. I'm not sure it's as clear-cut as some people have said so on social media. So again, something to ponder. If you agree or disagree, please feel free to let us know via our social media channels. But I didn't actually take too much issue, to be honest, with the decision not to enforce it on that wicket. But Matt, aside from that game at New Road then, let's go down to the First Central County Ground in Hove, where Middlesex County Cricket Club produced one of the most extraordinary run chases that we have seen in recent county cricket memory. A 7-wicket victory, chasing down 370 runs down in Hove. Might I just add, within 74 overs, with two players missing from the batting lineup. Robbie White unfortunately dislocated his shoulder, so I'm wishing Robbie all the very best of luck with his recovery. Fingers crossed it's nothing too serious. And Shaheen Shah Afridi also out as a result of illness. So they've essentially won by 7 wickets with two players missing, and they've done it within 74 overs. How on earth would you go about describing what we've seen today? It's remarkable, isn't it?
Absolutely. And thing is, as well, it's, I know we've talked about flat pitches, haven't we? And the fact that, you know, both teams were getting more than 300 in all their innings. So clearly there were more in it for the batters there. And obviously we know Sussex generally does tend to tilt that way. But when you're faced with such a massive change, when you're so far behind, it would be so easy to just fold, wouldn't it? It'd be so easy to just, you know, you don't give up, but it would be so easy to just, how do we conquer this? How do you climb that mountain? And especially, like you said, with two players out. I mean, if Shaheen Afridi can maybe, you know, just recover, but not quite recover in time for Thursday when we've got Nottingham, sure, that'd be good. No, I'm actually joking. I'd really, really love to see him play. Left love to see him clean up a few players, but I would love to see him play. No, anyway, back to the original thing. Yeah, fantastic. To trace that down, I mean, anything north of 200 is difficult. Anything north of 250 is almost impossible. Anything north of 300, well, wow. You're going to... That is memorable, isn't it? That is a memorable, memorable chase, underpinned by Sam Robson, who, yeah, he might have got a duck in the first innings, but he certainly seems to love Hove lately, doesn't he? And... It's a pity Mark Stoneman couldn't join him in replicating that stand that they put on toward the back end of last year. But yeah, I mean, Bar Stoneman, who I'm not discounting his talent, don't get me wrong, I'm not, you know, having a pop, he didn't quite come off in this game, it happened. But bar him, everybody contributed, didn't they? You know, Robson underpinned it, Hanscom took it on and kept going with 79. Max Holden with a quick fire 80, you know, that's what you need from your top order. And then Martin Anderson just seeing it home with a cute little 44 off 39, just to, yeah, when you're dealing with that, when you're chasing that in the limited time they had, everything about it, yeah, the conviction, the ability, the quality, and yeah, the panache to see it home. Fair play, Middlesex. You're definitely going to pose a very, very stern challenge on Thursday through Sunday, aren't you, this coming week?
They most certainly are. Again, we talk about statement victories. This does seem a case of the Saxes well and truly throwing down that gauntlet for the rest of Division 2. And I know it feels like we've jumped the gun a bit here, because there were three innings before this run chase. Sussex were 392 all out in their first innings, Middlesex 358 all out in theirs. And then there was Sussex's second innings. And this is where I think we should pick up the conversation, Matt, because, again, there's been a lot of talk about this on social media and, of course, on the YouTube live stream. Sussex 335 for 4 declared. Chiteshwar Pujara, by the way, 170 not out from 197 balls, 22 fours and 3 sixes. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Some of the shots he was playing in particular, that little battle between him and Shaheen Shah Afridi. For those who have not seen that, get on YouTube, watch the highlights immediately. Make that your priority. Make it the first thing that you do as soon as you are in front of a TV or computer screen. My word, is it worth it? It was absolutely sensational, to say the least. But he had set them up basically for the victory here. And a lot of people were saying on a flat wicket in Hove, although you wouldn't expect Middlesex to chase it down, there was always that possibility. Matt, in terms of the declaration, in hindsight, would you have looked at it differently? Or do you think that Tom Haynes did make the right decision in that moment?
This might be a slightly controversial opinion, but I think he did make the right decision. I think, you know, you have to, at some point, you have to believe that your team can bowl, can bowl a side out. And, you know, he looked at that Middlesex lineup and he saw essentially 9 players. You know, you mentioned they might have come out to bat, who knows, they might have been struggling, but he essentially saw a team that needed north of 350 with 2 players down. Well, you know, if Sussex knock them over, then everybody just goes, oh, well, fair play, you know, declared, they've done well, they've won the game there. There does ultimately come a time when you have to back your bowling and you have to give yourself enough time to bowl them out. And you'd almost as well say 74 overs is more than enough time to bowl a side out. And to be honest, Haynes looked at that and goes, is that long enough to get 370? Well, if we bowl well, no chance. So I think, you know, if Tom Haynes, as captain of Sussex, wants to win games of cricket. You know, that is the most basic thing of anything at all. That's just the basic. He made that decision with winning the game in mind. And just occasionally, you sometimes just have to tip your hat to the opposition and go, yeah, do you know what? Fair enough. Because hindsight is a wonderful thing. And of course, if he knew what was about to happen, he wouldn't have made the decision. They would have just kept the declaration. Sussex would have just kept batting. But yeah, sometimes you just have to say, well, do you know what? Fair enough. It was the right decision at the time, but you've pulled off a hell of a run chase. And there's not a lot I could have done about it. I think, to be honest, Middlesex would probably have agreed. They were thinking, well, yeah, when you go out to bat initially, you're probably thinking, well, we're trying to save the game here. And then, you know, you just need that spark. You should think, hang on a minute. Yeah, let's go for this. And that's what you love so much about red ball cricket. It can be these, sometimes it can just even come down to one over where the balance slightly tips and then the momentum's with somebody else and bang, the whole situation of the match changes. It's those little nuances. But no, I think Tom Haynes did make the right decision. And ultimately, we did just see one of those little moments where the momentum just changed and he's left looking a bit red-faced.
No, I'd agree with that, to be honest, Matt. I do think in the moments, I personally thought it was the right decision. At least it showed intent. They were trying to go after the game. I just feel like Sussex may have been lured into a false sense of security. Maybe with those two absentees, they never in their wildest dreams ever would have thought that Middlesex would have gone after the game. 74 overs, 370 runs to chase. It would have been, and it turned out to be actually, Middlesex's eighth highest ever successful run chase. They would not have thought for a million years that the Saxes would have gone after it. And yet Robson, Hanscom, Holden and Anderson just came out of the blocks and absolutely destroyed them, to be honest. I think it was a case of right initiative, right strategy, poor execution. And when things did start to go wrong, I think there was a lack of a plan B. So something to work on for the Martlets. Obviously, this is a crushing defeat. It'll hurt. But at the same time, tip your cap to Middlesex County Cricket Club. They look really good so far in this year's County Championship. And yeah, Matt, as you said, they will be a stern challenge indeed for the East Midlands County of Nottinghamshire in this upcoming round of games. But Matt, aside from the Saxes, let's go on to another promotion contender, Glamorgan County Cricket Club. The Welsh side are on fire at the moment after that massive 7-wicket victory at Trent Bridge. They did have the disappointments in the last round, but they've bounced back quite brilliantly, beating Leicestershire by 6 wickets at Sapphire Gardens this week. Just before we get into the game, Matt, one question. Do you still think they're not vying for promotion? You did allude to that in one of the shows. Do you think that Glamorgan are beginning to, I don't know, display some signs of maybe, you know, being promotion contenders, or do you still think that it's a bit too early days? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a really tough one, isn't it? I don't want to do them down, but maybe just at the moment, they're a little bit too mercurial. You might just want to see. What they need to do is string it together, don't they? They need to start. Yeah, that was a really, really impressive win at Trent Bridge, don't get me wrong, and I'm not taking anything away from them. They fully deserved that win. So they've got to back it up. And yes, they backed it up this week, but they didn't back it up last week, did they? They didn't, you know, it's been win, loss, win, what you need. To be honest, more than in Red Bull, you know, more than win, 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 what you occasionally just need, if you are going to be a little bit inconsistent in terms of the result, you maybe need win, draw, win, or win, draw, draw. Or, you know, you need to stay unbeaten rather than, you know, if you're winning one week and pulling off a really, really, probably the most impressive victory that they've had in years to go to Trent Bridge and win as convincingly as they did, then to come back and lose, you're almost undoing all your hard work and you're releasing some of that pressure that you might be building up elsewhere in the division. So it's just about making sure that they become, if almost as well, if you have to sacrifice the ability to win a couple in order to draw another couple that you would have otherwise lost, then, because for me, four draws, you know, it's hardly an original opinion, but four draws is better than 2 wins and 2 defeats, because you need to be just constantly picking up those points and you need to be proving that you're a really, really tough outfit. So, you know, if they draw the next couple, or they get 2 wins out of 3 with a draw, then yes, I think we can call them contenders. But I just, at the moment, let's keep looking at them for me.
No, fair enough. Again, you're entitled to your opinion. It's a subjective game, isn't it? The wonderful
game. You disagree?
Well, I mentioned in the preview show, I saw of them as dark horses. Again, I didn't see them as outright promotion contenders. But the real key thing for me, I mentioned this in the preview show, was the bowling. Because last year they had the second least wickets in county cricket. They took 168 wickets as a collective. The only team which had less wickets, funny enough, was Surrey, who have almost flipped that on its head in 2022. I think the re-addition of Michael Neeser has been fantastic. I really do think he's been excellent. I also think just that seam attack this year, and they've proved it again in this game, there does seem to be a much better feel, a much better cohesion to that unit as opposed to 2021. And the other major thing that I wanted to look at, aside from the bowling, was the middle order. And this week, again, was a fantastic example of why I do rate this Glamorgan outfit. Sam Northeast scored 84 from 125. Kieran Carlson, the young prospect, scoring 91 from 135 balls. Those two put on 182 runs for the 4th wicket and put Glamorgan in a commanding position to go on and win this game. So I think for me, obviously things had to go right, but so far they've got a big tick next to the bowling, the middle order's firing, and in addition to that, I mean, even in the run chase, the other thing which I mentioned, the opening partnership between Lloyd and Salter, those two put on 43 for the opening wicket. So for Glamorgan, another fantastic performance. It is early days. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But after a few years of toiling away in Division 2, I don't know, 2022 does just have a little bit of a different feel to it. I know it's been a very competitive league. But this Glamorgan side, with the likes of Chris Cook in there as well, you can't forget him. You've got the likes of Tim van der Hoogten when he comes back from injury. I don't know, I think they're going to throw the cat amongst the pigeons. We'll have to wait and see, of course, but this was yet another very, very good performance from the Welsh outfits on home soil. On the flip side, let's talk a bit about Leicestershire, unfortunately, Matt. Not the best week for the Foxes. Again, I mean, where do they go from here? I know that's a very, very tough question, but in terms of personnel, in terms of tactics, in terms of approach to the game, how do the Foxes bounce back? Because so far this summer, they've had such an over-reliance on their two openers, Hassan Azad and Sam Evans. Azad in this game scored 250-plus scores. And then on the bowling front, we mentioned this so many times here on the pod, but it's always Chris Wright and Callum Parkinson. Aside from Ben Mike at Lords, and he did take three wickets this week, there doesn't seem to be the consistency in the rest of that Foxes bowling lineup in comparison to other teams. How do they flip the script on its head? How do the Foxes bounce back and reverse this poor run of form in Division 2?
Yeah, it's really tough, isn't it? And I know I keep coming back to this. I know I do. But again, they are always going to be up against it in terms of going up against counties with bigger budgets. And, you know, it can be done. We know that it can be done. We know that, you know, Leicestershire have won the T20 in the past. They can compete. They're not there to be whipping by. But yeah, it's really, really tough. And there were a bit of a makeshift outfit, weren't there, this week? You know, Callum Parkinson captaining them. Don't get me wrong, he knows what he's doing, but they were without a regular captain. Colin Ackerman, weren't they? So it was always going to be tough for them this week. But I think, to be honest, as a club, you really like them. You know, you really like what they do. And I've got to as well, just at this point, quickly mention their initiative next week where they're dishing out free tickets, because this is brilliant. This is promoting the game. They know that they've got Chiteshwar Pujara and Mohammed Rizwan coming from Sussex next week. And it's absolutely fantastic. It's a fantastic opportunity to say to that community, who possibly might not even know this, such as the lack of publicisation of this competition, that Chiteshwar Pujara is going to be playing in Leicester next week. Well, that's just fantastic. What an opportunity. Dish out free tickets. Get these people down. Get the, you know, the interest is there. You know, get these people in. Get this competition publicised. And Sean Jarvis deserves a lot of credit for that. So I think, to be honest, Leicestershire's success this season, and indeed maybe in the season to come, you know, in the immediate season to come, if they're not putting together a promotion challenge, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not been a successful season. Because if they can be almost as a vehicle to get people, they're in a fantastic area to drive interest into the county game. And so if Leicester can use that opportunity and do that, then that, I think that almost counts as success for them, even if they don't quite make it on the field. Because if they can bring these players in, these people in, who knows? They might get one in the academy, they might get three, four in the academy, they might bring these players through, and suddenly it all clicks for them. So, yeah, I think what they do, instead of panicking and saying, oh, everything's falling apart on the field, no, it's not. Look for success in other ways. And I think that would be a colossal success if they get packed stands of local people to watch Rizwan and Pujara, and they themselves then think, this is fantastic, Leicestershire, this is brilliant, I'm going to come and watch another game, I'm going to go to my local club, I'm going to try out for trials. That's success for Leicestershire for me. That's what they want to be. They want to be in the heart of their community, and they want to develop from within. And then that is how they're going to achieve success in the long run.
It's a fair point, to be honest, Matt. Again, it is a club which had that disconnect, didn't it, with its local community for a number of years. I think a lot of people, not just in Leicester, but the entire county, did feel a little bit disenfranchised with their local county side. So a fantastic initiative. And I do make this point a lot, but it is a marathon, not a sprint with this side. We're not going to see them at their best just yet. I mean, even in this game, you saw Scott Steele making his first-class debut for the Foxes. You saw Rishi Patel coming back after an injury layoff. It is going to take time. I think Rishi is going to be a really interesting player to watch, by the way, might I just add, in both Red Bull crickets and in the white ball arena. But again, I just, from a cricket analysis perspective, I just want to see improvement, in particular in the bowling. I've mentioned this since 2020. They have got to find someone else to act as a foil for Chris Wright and Callum Parkinson. Because it's all well and good having two strike bowlers. I think every single unit has those premier options. But you need other contributions. And even if that isn't wickets, we mentioned this with Dustin Melton, you've got to keep things tight. And I always look at the scorecards with Leicestershire, something that I do have a little bit of an obsession with. And a lot of them do seem to go over 3.54 runs and over. If they can just bring that down slightly, produce the pressure, allow for the likes of Parkinson and Wright to have that pressure built up for them, I do think Leicestershire could become a much better side in the future, and sincerely hope that they do in the next few months and years. But Matt, as a result of that victory in Cardiff, let's have a look at the tables for Division 2 at the end of the fifth round. And at the top of the table, after that historic victory in Hove, Middlesex atop of the tree on 82 points. A fantastic performance from the Saxes sees them rise to the top of the table. In second, Glamorgan fans, I know you're going to have a massive smile on your face right now. 74 points. The Welsh side are currently in second. In third, with a game in spare, we have Notts on 73 points. In fourth, a Derbyshire on 65 points, also with that game in hand. In fifth, a Durham on 58 points. In sixth, with a game in hand, a Worcestershire on 52 points. In seventh, a Sussex on 38 points. And in eighth, a Leicestershire on 34 points. And you know how this works by now. For the long-term listeners out there, we don't just look at the Division 1 and Division 2 tables. To wrap up today's show, we do, of course, have a look at our cricket draft fantasy table. And this week, unfortunately for Steve-O for England CC, wasn't great. We've dropped out the top 50. We're now 70th in our own league. So, yeah, relatively mid-table, to say the least, from us here at TCCP. But right at the top of the table, Rory Law, going from second to first, are the missing links on 9,144 points. So well done to Rory. Your team are currently top of our fantasy league. In second, rising four places from sixth to second, are the MJS 11, captained by Matt Sharp on 9,073 points. And in third, moving up 13 places from 16th to third place, a fine leg CC captained by Matt France on 8,716 points. So again, for anyone interested in joining that cricket draft league, you can find the link using the link in our bio. It's completely free to join. You can join it at any time in the season, and it is just a bit of fun, to be honest. We just have a little bit of a mess around with it. So if that's something which would interest you, please feel free to go and check that out at your own discretion. But Matt, that is basically it, to be honest, for tonight's show. Thank you once more for coming on. Always a pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. But that is basically it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for another bumper episode of TCCP. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.